If you love it and you think you have what it takes, go for it. And you only have one life, and you know, and I think, you know, life's short and you should chase your passions in life. A lot of people don't. And I think it's special to do it. And, you know, maybe one day you can, you know, make your dreams happen and do something you really love to do for a living. And like, I honestly think I'm privileged and so happy and lucky to be in this situation. And, you know, it's been great.
Okay. Like and subscribe.
Coffee Club. Coffee Club. Grind your beans and grab your favorite mug. It's Ollie Morgan, George and Gus. It's them boys from Coffee Club. Boys from Coffee Club.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Coffee Club podcast for episode 203. Today, we are taking a little foray into Holt Mania. Holt the Bolt, Usain Holt. The man, the myth, the legend. We've talked about him so many times on this podcast. He's an absolute fan favorite, and now he's here in the studio with us. We're so lucky to have him. Eric Holt, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. This is my first time ever being in Colorado, and you know, I didn't really know that much about Colorado, and it's, you know, it's very beautiful, really clean. I mean, it's a really cool spot.
That's a good adjective, clean. We like clean, right, Ollie?
Yeah.
We'll take clean.
We'll take clean any day of the week.
It's better than dirty, I guess, right?
Yeah. Where were you coming from? Just to contrast it.
So like New York. So in New York, yeah, you go on a run, mm-hmm, and like, unfortunately, you know, everyone litters and, yeah, you know, maybe not as, you know.
You got to bring that Colorado mentality back to New York.
Do you live, you guys don't probably live right in the city, do you?
No, yeah. So you have to like pretty much make a lot of money to live in the city, you know, like a small studio, for instance, probably costs like $3,000-$4,000 a month.
Sheesh.
So you don't want to live in the city. So I actually live in Connecticut, so a little outside the city.
Connecticut's
so
nice.
The state of Connecticut.
Yeah.
Connecticut's
wow.
Nice.
See you somewhere else.
Well, I mean, $3,000-$4,000 for a studio, that's pretty much Boulder as well, right?
Well, I don't live in Boulder. Yeah. So I live in the Connecticut of Colorado. I live in a place called Gun Barrel.
Oh, wow.
Same thing.
How American is that name?
Yeah. When I tell people back in Australia that I live... See, I'm just used to it by now.
Yeah.
But when I tell people in Australia that I live in a town called Gun Barrel, they're like, yeah, that's America.
Yeah. When I told my brother, he was like, of course you do.
Yeah. So we're going to have so much fun stuff to talk about today. We're going to go all through the lore of the man, Eric Holt, his whole history, his whole journey, which has been an absolutely amazing journey. So we're very excited to get the insight. Before we do get into that, we do have a couple of very special bean shout outs. First off, this one was given to me by a man named Pierce from the University of Wisconsin cross country team. And this is super special. It comes in a Collectivo bag, which is a very popular roastery in the Wisconsin area, but it's not actually Collectivo coffee because he roasted it himself. So I haven't tasted it yet, but we'll have to taste it and we'll have to give him a
thorough review.
Yeah.
So does he say what type of roast it is?
This is a medium to dark roast from a Guatemala washed bean. The tasting notes are malty, nutty, chocolate, and wine. So he knows what he's doing, I guess. So I'm very excited to try that one. And this other bag is a cool story behind it. The roaster is, I think, Water Avenue. It's this collab between Coffee Company and the Rose City Track Club. So that's in Portland. This was given to me by Kendall, who works for On, and her husband, Brant, who works for a different company whose name I won't say. But they run for Rose City Track Club, which is, I guess, one of the big track clubs in Portland. And between, they did like a collab blend with one of the local roasteries, Water Avenue Coffee. So this is very special. The type of stuff that we would love to be doing. We love these stories. Yeah. And we're very excited to try this one. It's actually called Speedwork. So yeah, really, really on brand for us. So very excited to try this one as well. So thank you guys very much for the beans. But I guess we may as well just jump right into it. So let's go all the way back to kind of the early days of getting into running. You did end up going to, I can never say the name right, Binghamton?
Yeah, Binghamton, yeah.
Binghamton.
Yeah.
Maybe for the listeners, you gotta...
It took me like 3 years to learn how to say it too, so...
Thank you.
It's a tough word.
Thank you. So where exactly is that?
It is Western New York. So okay. It's kind of near like Syracuse, Ithaca, where Cornell is. Yeah, near Rochester.
Okay. So that's where you went to college. But even before that, in high school, you had some like real good performances already, and then you just ended up deciding to go there. But were you always kind of into running, or were you doing other sports and stuff? What did it look like in high school?
Yeah, so you know, sports were pretty big in my family. You know, my dad would always like brag about sports back in the day, and I came from more of an American family, so my dad wanted me to be like a football player, basketball player, baseball. And, you know, those are the three sports like I was expected to play. But
the Holy Trinity.
Yeah. So like it was always like awkward going to like family gatherings because all my cousins, you know, they were all like a little bigger, more muscular. You know, I was like the small guy. And so I think what happened was it all started in eighth grade. And basically what happened was I didn't make the eighth grade basketball team, which I thought was more maybe nepotism, you know. Like the coach knew some athletes, but I basically was doing nothing all day. And one of my sisters was on the track team. So I joined, and within a couple months, I broke 5 minutes in the mile in eighth grade, 14 years old. And like my coach in high school was like, oh, wow, you know, that's actually like really incredible. And I was like, oh, okay, maybe I'll do this for a couple more years, break four. And then do like another sport or something. And so that just started, you know, the journey. And then from there, you know, I decided to do cross country my freshman year and just slowly get better and better.
Mm-hmm. And so you're doing this in the East Coast is a real different vibe. And
yeah,
I mean, imagine there was a lot of talent that you raced against like throughout high school, right?
Yeah. I mean, one of the most talented runners I had was one of my teammates. He ended up getting a full ride to Oklahoma State. And he was like an unbelievable talent. So all throughout high school, like he was more or less the golden boy. He was 2 years younger than me. And I was like, you know, like the good runner, but not the great runner. And so for me, you know, it's funny, like when I go back to Carmel, people always get me confused with this other runner because we're like the only two great runners from Carmel High School. So people would be like, oh, they'll tell an embarrassing story about me. And I'm like, you know, that's the other kid, not me. But yeah.
But you did end up getting to do like New Balance. Well, we have Tom okay. Wang, manager Tom, who I know that you've met. Also, well, he's from New Jersey, but lives in New York now. He sent in the results from the, I think it must be the 2 mile at New Balance. And it's won by a name that we're very familiar with, Mr. Ed Cheserick.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of like second place is Sean McGordy. There's a lot of big names in here. And one of them is Joe Klecker.
Oh, wow.
What was Klecker?
So Klecker came 13th in this race and Eric was sick. So you were like right up there. Like,
yeah.
And I don't know if this was your lot. Was this your last year of high school?
It was either my junior or senior year, I think. Probably was my senior year, I'm guessing. I got a lot better my senior year. I also, like, when I was in high school, I had no idea how recruiting worked. No one, like, briefed me or anything. So, like, I didn't, like, reach out to any schools. At the time, I was a little clueless about running. I think it was my junior year, I found out who Hikam El Guerrouj was. So I was kind of, like, very green to the sport, for sure. And so I think, you know, at the time, like, you know, I was kind of going off of like who was giving me the biggest scholarship, and Binghamton at the time had some good runners, Jesse Garn, Eric Van Egan. And so I decided to, you know, go there. And I also think, like I said, you know, I had a great teammate in high school who pushed me. And, you know, for me, I'm like, if I'm going to run and get stigmatized as, you know, not a great athlete, because, you know, in my family, you know, I feel like a lot of Americans look at it endurance sports as like not like, you know, alpha, you know?
Not like, alpha enough.
Yeah. It's like, I feel like I came from a family. If you're not like 200 pounds, like benching 315, you're kind of like a sissy, you know?
Is that what they say?
Yeah. So like, I felt like I'm like, if I'm going to do running, I got to be good at it. You know, I got to make this count, you know, like I got to go all in. I got to like, you know, go to the D1 level and go as far as I can. And, you know, I don't want to like waste this opportunity. So I feel like I loved competition. Winning was like super like contagious. I just felt like, you know, we had like a little bit of an orthodox program where we did like low mileage but high intensity. We had like all out workout Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and then either workout Saturday or race Saturday.
That's wild.
And so it was like we weren't running that much. We did like a 1 mile workout and then like, I don't know, a couple 400s, and then you're just like going hard in trainers, no super shoes or spikes, just going hard almost every day. And so high school was like honestly more physically tough than the training I'm doing now, just because it was just redlining all the time, you know?
Yeah, I can't imagine too many high schoolers training like that these days.
Yeah.
That would rake me in it.
I mean, like, culturally it's changed so much. Like, you mentioned the recruiting process. I bet you all the high schoolers know exactly how the recruiting goes. I reckon they're all doing double threshold. They've all got their lactate meters.
Yeah,
all
that sort of days shit. Of, like, your, like, blissful ignorance are... I mean, it definitely would still exist out there, but it'd be a lot more
rare. It'd be much rarer. I feel like a lot of runners these days, they've got a lot more information. Technology's made it easier for sure.
Yeah, the training is much more standardized, like probably what everyone's
and
doing.
And also coaches as well. Coaches are probably learning more too, so that's going to implement into programs.
Mm-hmm. So it's a very different vibe now. But nonetheless, you did end up at the D1 level at a like very respectable school. So you go over to, like you said before, that when you got into running, you were like, oh, maybe do this for 2 years, break four, and then ride off into the sunset. By the time you turn up on campus, how has that attitude changed?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Binghamton definitely was a type of program. You know, they produced runners like Emily Mackay, who's one of the best. And I think it was an interesting program because when I got there, I felt like the intensity was like lowered by like 10 notches. And so, you know, people tried, but I felt like I got to, you know, college and, you know, some of my teammates, not all, were like, you know, more into like drinking and socializing. And so it was like more or less school, partying, and then running. And so I felt like the intensity went down. And I felt like also like training was completely different. You know, I was used to do very low mileage, but incredible high intensity, where now I'm doing like, for the first time ever, tempos, longer runs. And I'm like, what is all this? Like 10-mile runs every day? Like, I'm not used to this, you know? So it was like, honestly, a completely different sport. And, you know, in high school, my coach, he was like a drill sergeant. He would like scream at me, you know, curse at me. He was always like very intense. And then I come to like a program, which honestly, it wasn't bad, but there was no intensity. And I felt like, you know, not everyone on the team was trying to, you know, necessarily be the best runner they could be. You know, they were just there to just, you know, just like compete and run, but they weren't trying to necessarily make NCAAs. And the whole intention of a program like Binghamton is always conferences first. So the goal for me was to win as many American East titles rather than try to like qualify for NCAAs. And that was the hardest thing for me because like, after you win like 4 or 5 times, it's the allure of winning American East title isn't that special. And I was like, hey, you know, I remember you running like 3:55 during the summer. It's like, I want to be like Morgan McDonald and run 3:55, qualify for NCAAs, win. And I feel like by the time like my eligibility was closing, I never had broken 4. I wasn't breaking 1:50. And so people kind of looked at me as, hey, if he was going to run those times, he would have ran them by now. You know, now he's too old. And so I got treated like kind of like an old man in a way. And so my eligibility ended. I finished college and it was tough on me because I put so much of my identity into the sport. And, you know, like I wanted to be the best runner I could be so bad. And I'm like, oh, man, like I didn't do nothing. And it was the year after college was really tough because then I got like a real job working 9 to 5, and I was like, dude, this sucks, bro. Like, I'm not making much money. I'm working 9 to 5, getting out of shape. And I always felt like, well, meh, I guess I wasn't that talented. I guess I didn't have what it took
to
be a pro.
How hard were you training during that time still?
I mean, honestly, I trained way harder in high school than I did in college.
But the year after college, when you were working full time, what did your running look like during that time?
So it's funny. So basically, I took like 6-8 months off. And then I decided to train myself. And basically what I would do is I worked at this place. It was called Four Winds. It was a mental psych ward. And we would work 13-hour shifts. And during my break, I would just run all out. I would just like run, I think I had like a 40-minute break. So I'd run 30 minutes. I'd have my running clothes underneath my work clothes, go to my car, and then just run like 5-6 miles at like 5:30 pace, start sweating. And then, like, I would go back to work, and they would, like, throw me, like, a towel. And, like, what is going on? And I didn't want to tell my rant for some reason. And I was like, oh, I just stress or whatnot. I just made up, like, a dumb lie. So they all thought, like, God. I was probably, like, you know, doing coke or something.
Like, every break he disappears and he comes back super hot and sweaty.
Super, yeah, hot and sweaty.
But, yeah, I just, like, I trained kind of
so
like...
So that was your life, like, 5 days a week you were doing something like that?
Yeah, like, I didn't do any, like, tempos or stuff. Like, I would just run intense runs during my breaks, and then I would do one workout every single week. I only did one workout.
What day would the workout be, on the weekend?
Yeah, usually a day off. And then I'd run 3x4x4. And my goal was try to break 60 on every rep. And I usually did it like at 10 o'clock at night when, like, you know, I was like the track was more or less more open. And funny enough, I did it only once where I did the workout again was 3 sets of 4x4, 1 minute rest, 5 minutes in between sets. And one time I averaged 59s with standing starts. And... Bye. 5 days later, I ran 3:58. So I was like, oh, I did it. I finally broke four, like completely training like an idiot.
Yeah, I was going to say, so even though the training sounds
unorthodox,
crazy, very, very difficult. I mean, you improved.
Yeah.
So it like worked for you.
Yeah, it was funny. I actually improved in every single event training like that. I PR'd in the 3K, 1K, 800, mile, 15. And, like, to be fair, I didn't run, like, crazy quick, but I improved in everything just because I just felt like I trained at a high level. And
did you have a specific, was your specific goal, I want to break four in the mile? Was that what it looked like for you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So, like, when I first broke five, you know, I was like, all right, I'll think by the sophomore year, I'll break four, finally, you know, do that, and then I'll do football and, you know, maybe try to be, like, a D1 football player. And my dad was like, you can only play football when you're over 200 pounds and, you know, you're like lifting heavy weights. So,
wow. So yeah. I can't imagine you ever played football.
No, I never did. But yeah, my dad, it's always funny because my dad was like, I remember he was saying, we would always get in the dumbest arguments because like my dad's like, I bet you Cole Hawker can bench 315. And I'm like, Dad, he can't. He's like, yeah, he can. He's like, all those guys can because they want it more than you. I'm like, that doesn't correlate. Or another good story was after, like, randomly, my dad's like, hey, let's go to the track on Saturday and run a mile and then take 5 minute rest. And then until you do it and you break four. Like, my dad thought that was the only way to train. Like, just keep on running a mile until you break
four.
This is like a very
football or a different type of sport mindset being trying to apply to running.
Yeah.
And it does not work.
Yeah. I tried telling them. He's like, why do you run recovery runs? Why are you doing this? You're wasting your time. Just go to a track and then try to break 340.
Man, you gotta give this guy like a basic like running training for beginners book or something.
Just go on like do like the camps. Like, you know how like people go on like European training camps, like
make
summer
him,
camps?
Yeah, make just him make try him go train like that.
And like watch all the athletes do it. Because in St. Moritz, they're all there. Or like if you go like down to Arizona or something and you just see what they do. He would be shocked to see Cole Hawker's not benching 315 pounds.
And he's doing easy runs.
And he's doing easy runs. And he's actually doing like stuff on the boost and he's cycling and he's doing different, you know, he's doing stuff just to turn the legs over.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So we're already at the point where you've run 358 doing this very unorthodox training. And then what's next for you? Do you start looking at, is this when you started looking at Empire or is there still time in between that?
No, there's still time. So this was in 2019. And then like I was kind of training, but I lost a lot of motivation.
Oh, also just for context. So out of college, your PB was 402.
Correct.
So the people know. So then, yeah, doing this, you had improved all the way down to 358.
Correct. Yeah. And I won the race too. And I beat like a bunch of like 354 guys, including like Rob Napolitano and, you know, a bunch of the NJNY guys. So. Mm-hmm. Like, I actually beat, like, decent runners. So it was cool to, like, achieve a lifelong goal and, you know, win the race, which is...
That's the way you want to do it.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
So I started training, but I lost a lot of motivation. And honestly, what honestly, like, saved my career and got me to this point was COVID. So COVID happened. I didn't have a job anymore. And so I just, like, was, like, visiting my cousins and, like, visiting other friends I haven't seen in years and just... kind of like, you know, acting somewhat childish. And then I was like, you know what? Like, I may as well run again. I have literally nothing else to do, you know? And so I just started like training again, got, you know, a second wind in my career. And funny enough, like I was still struggling a little bit, but I was aiming for this 2 mile like COVID time trial. And I ended up running like 9:07, but the watch got messed up and it said I ran like 8:30. And so Tom Nohilly, who was one of the coaches at Empire Elite, he was like, "Holy crap, Eric, you need to join a club immediately." And
wait, so, how does that happen? How does the watch mess up? Like, were you timing yourself or was someone else timing you?
So basically they like went through, I believe, Strava. And so my watch, I think it was an older watch. It was like horribly inaccurate. So on the track, you know, instead of like 2 miles.
Yeah, they're normally not perfect on it if you run on a track anyway.
So I basically thought I ran like 2.2. But anyways, Tom Nohilly and like Trotman like recruited me and said, "Hey, you should show up to practice." And I was on the team with Johnny Gregoire, Colby Alexander, who are two Oregon studs. And it was funny because my first ever practice, we were doing this like hard workout and I kind of like clicked to the program. They're like, "Hey, go run with Johnny Gregoire, a 349 miler." And I was like, "Oh, okay." And it was like so exciting. And I remember there was a group of like 12 established runners and I was like probably the slowest guy. And it was just me and Johnny near the end of the workout. And I remember on the last rep, there was like a picnic table and I was supposed to, I guess, go on the right side. But I went on the left side and I ended up colliding with Johnny. And Johnny got like really mad. And he's like, "Who are you?" And he like pushed me over. He's like, "Let's go right now." I was like, "You want to go? Like, I have like 50 pounds on you." So I had like the horse start. And they're like, "Guys, look at
that." That was your first workout with
the
team.
That was my first workout. So I almost got to fight the best runner on the team. And like, I was like, you want, like, I weigh like 40 more pounds, you know? My dad used to make me box as a kid. So I was like, "All right, you want to go?" I don't know. And then we ended up being good friends, but it was a bit of a turbulent start. And it was funny because it was like the greatest running moment in my life. I was like, "Wow, first time ever." I just like the leashes were off. Run with Johnny Gregoire, run with Colby Alexander, 3:33:15 guy, and just go to work. And, you know, I went from 3:45 PR to 3:36 by that outdoors and qualified for the Olympic trials, which was like amazing. You know, I got so much better. I finally broke 150. You know, I just like was improving like rapidly. And because it was my first time, like I was training at like an elite level. And I finally had the opportunity and I had coaches that believed in me. And it was just like special. It was like a rush. So in a way it's like cool because I feel like the reason I have such longevity is because, you know, I started doing elite training, you know, in like 2020. So
it kind of took the long road to get to what maybe some other people had already been doing for like quite a lot longer. But then by the time that you got there, you were so ready to take advantage of it. And you definitely, it sounds like you weren't taking it for granted. You know, you were so excited to be there with this team and to be a part of it. And I guess the results showed that.
Yeah, no, it was awesome. I mean, it was so fun. And, you know, I got to finally race against good runners. And like I ended up running 3:36 in the race that Josh Kerr ran 3:31, which at the time was the American soil record. And I remember in that race, I like just stuck with him. I was right behind Josh Kerr. I would think I went out in like 1:52. And I remember I hit like the biggest wall and I was like, "Oh no, I didn't make the trials." I probably ran like 3:42 because I didn't realize runners were going to run that fast. I didn't know at the time Josh Kerr was that good. And like, I would remember like being depressed and like, "Eric, you ran 3:36. And that was a race that Joe Klecker ran 3:37. So,
Yeah, I was going to say, I think probably for us, Ollie, like that's probably, and probably for a lot of people, that's the time when people started paying attention and being like, Who is this guy?
Yeah.
You know, I think that's probably when we would have first seen your race.
Yeah. And then a couple of like from then on, it was the races, Dr. Sanders, Milrose, like a lot of those races started to come through. And like in the sports, consistency that gets you to those other races. So when you had that opportunity, it's nice that it's not like, even though like obviously it's a stepping stone for the trials for you, but it's also a stepping stone of like, this might get you into other races, other opportunities to run fast and to run with some really good guys. So
yeah
because at that point you're mixing it up with a lot of other good US guys, and I think everyone could see your enthusiasm. And people kind of, when someone comes out of like people running those times, you've normally seen them in high school, you've seen them in college, you've seen like this kind of more normal trajectory, I guess. So for you it was a bit more, who is this guy? He's representing Empire. Well, at the time, maybe you could just give a little overview, because I think sometimes from the outside it's a bit confusing. There's, you know, there was the New York New Jersey Track Club, which then became Correct. Empire Elite. What is it? What does that look like today, or what does it look like through your time?
So NJNY, I never had the luxury to be part of it, but they were sponsored by Hoka, and they were like one of the biggest track clubs and coached by, you know, Coach Gags, who is a legendary coach in America. And basically, they were stationed in Dobbs Ferry, which is in Westchester. But essentially, you know, this was a club sponsored by Hoka. Eventually, they lose the Hoka sponsorship. So the club completely dismantles. And then Coach Tom Nohilly and John Trotman eventually picked up the pieces and created a club called Empire Elite, which is, again, completely non-sponsored. You know, it's a club where you got to pay for basically everything. You know, you don't get any sort of financial support. And, you know, a lot of times, like, I give Trotman so much credit, he actually loses money from the sport. So he doesn't make any money. He actually loses money. So he does this because he's very proud of what he does. And, you know, he hopes that one day, you know, Empire gets funding like NJNY did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy and it's really difficult to make it work. And there's definitely, I mean, a few of the guys would have had their own, I guess, individual sponsorships back when you joined, like a Johnny.
Yeah.
He would have been sponsored. But then, so everyone else was kind of doing it the hard way, working jobs and just just grinding it out, right?
Yeah. Yeah, basically. So, yeah, it definitely is not easy. I mean, having a sponsor is great because it's like, wow, like I don't have to pay for literally everything. I can make a little more money. And then now I can do altitude trips. Mm-hmm. You know, I just have a lot more flexibility. I can focus a lot more on running. And now it's like, all right, finally, like, now let's see how truly good I can be, you know?
Yeah, I want to get a bit more into that because there was, once you had established, you had put your name out there on the map, I think everyone was paying attention, and you continued to run really fast times and have these amazing results. But for a long time, you were doing it still unsponsored, and you were competing alongside all these other sponsored runners. So there was a big, you ultimately garnered so much, I think, support from people that were looking at you perform and saying, let's get this guy a sponsor.
We talked about it a few times on the podcast, I remember.
It was, I mean, everyone was like,
everyone was on it.
Let's get this guy a sponsor. And it felt like it took, from the outside, it felt like it took a long time. I imagine for you, it felt maybe even longer.
Yeah.
What was that time like? Did you always believe that sponsorship was going to end up coming if you kept doing what you're doing?
I mean, it was tough because, you know, I talked to a lot of agents and, you know, every agent I talked to was like, hey, you know, if you were just coming out of college, you'd have a great sponsor. And I'm like, dude, that's awesome. But I'm not, you know, hey, man, if I could identify as like a 20-year-old, I would, you know, but unfortunately, you know, I can't change my age. And I remember, you know, I was very lucky to have the agent I have now. It's an agent that most runners in the running world have never heard of. His name's Liam Fail, and he's a New Yorker. And he was the only agent that like believed in me and said, we're going to get you sponsored. And it was a really tough road. And I had a few companies reach out and they said, all right, we're going to sponsor you. And then I remember like I showed up to like a restaurant and I was so excited. I was with like my friends and family. And then my agent's like, oh yeah, they at the last second, they rescinded your contract because they're going to give it to someone else. And I was like, wait, what? And I literally like cried. I was like, no, like it was so devastating. And I was so mad. And I was like, oh shit. And like, this was like right before like, you know, the New York Grand Prix. And that I would say was my big race. I remember I was going against like Whiteman, you know, Kessler. And I would say I was the most fired up I've ever been in a race. I'm like, I don't care what I'm winning this, you know? And I remember in that race, I closed in 52, ran at the time a PR 3:34.04. And I would say that was the most fired up I've ever been in a race in my entire life. Cause I was so angry and upset because like, you know, it's imagine someone giving something you worked your whole life for. And at the last second, and you thought it was 100% guaranteed, and then they just take it away. Like on the day of, you were supposed to like sign a contract. And
that's
so
brutal.
That was really hard. But luckily after that race, you know, I did a like a crazy interview, I guess. And, you know, I had like a ton of attention.
You are well known for your post-race interviews as well.
Yeah, yeah.
You said some very entertaining things.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really funny because, you know, I have a childhood friend. And he was just like, hey, make sure you get to the coffee club on time. don't talk about certain things. You're going to do great.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll get into some of those things later. we'll see where this goes. I remember that race in New York because that was like, yeah, that was some real next level stuff. And it's funny to hear that it was fueled by a lot of emotions and a lot of anger. And I think feel like more in the early days of the pod, Ollie, that was kind of a joke for you, running on the being fueled by
running on angst and anger. Yeah. Well, I mean, it works sometimes. Sometimes it wears you out.
It's a real kind of up and down strategy.
You can't use it all the time. I think it's not sustainable in a career, but it's sustainable in certain points in the career when you need it. And I think for Eric,
how you feel as well?
Yeah, absolutely.
When you need it, I'll use it. But like you can't use it every race, otherwise you're just gonna be a puddle on the ground. You're gonna be just
Yeah. No, I would say my best workouts a lot of time, I remember, you know, back in the day. You know, I had a teammate say something about being an unk washed. And I'm like, all right, I'll show you right now, you know?
They're saying unk at practice.
I feel like sometimes it's like, it is what it is. Like, I would go to a meet and I would like get ready. And I remember at BU, all the college kids were saying, hey, unk. And I was like, oh my God. Like,
where did that come from? The unk?
I think there was a runner, his name was like, I think Aaron Brown or something. He made like a viral video calling me like old or something and homeless, which wasn't necessarily true, but whatever.
That's messed up, dude.
And then adding a few years to my life, like I was a lot older, you know, but it is what it is. I mean, at the end of the day, any publicity is good publicity.
That's what they say.
So it kind of helped. And, you know, I mean, immediately after like, you know, the New York Grand Prix, I went viral for my interview.
What did you say exactly in that interview?
Oh, man, I think I was just like very emotional. And, you know, I just said like at the time I was living with my parents, you know, this is not what I wanted. And, you know, I've been training my whole life to be a pro.
I remember that added so much fuel to the get this man sponsored.
Because I think it would fuel the emotion now. Like the emotion was, you know, getting this thing that you've been working your whole life and it stripped out at the last second. I mean, that would like killed me, you know, And then at that moment, I was just fired up. I'm like, I have to win New York Grand Prix. And, you know, that ended up like being my big race. I lost, I think, to Whiteman by 0.01. And, you know, it was came down to the wire. And, you know, a lot of people were impressed by that. And, you know, Hobbs Kessler gave me a huge shout out saying, like, I'm not a dark horse. I'm like, I couldn't make the Olympic team. And, yeah, then Puma reached out and finally, you know, gave me a contract. And that was like the coolest moment, one of the coolest moments of my life, for sure.
Yeah, that is, I mean, it was so good to see a happy ending to that story. And now, as you already mentioned, you have a bit more security and you're able to live more of a pro athlete lifestyle. Yeah. Is it, but even since that, there's still been ups and downs. I mean, this sport, we all know, always has these ups and downs, but in general now is being a sponsored runner. Does it feel like you're kind of more living the dream?
Yeah, I mean, I think what happened was my first year, I think I overdid way too much. I would just try to like max lift, max speed a lot. I end up pulling my hamstring pretty bad. And then I had like a few other injuries. And I think for me, I was just trying to like almost go too hard. I'm like, all right, I gotta go all out. And I feel like this was a very big learning year where it's like, all right, listen, you don't have to kill yourself every single day. You can take it easy, trust your talent. And, you know, I feel like near the end of my season, I started to like, you know, not go too hard. And then I ended up running 3:32 and I had a little bit more consistency despite, you know, an injury fueled year. So I feel like now, like this year, I'm like, all right, let's you know, not make the mistakes we made last year. So
that's what it's all
about. That's what it's all about. So it's all about.
But yeah, along the way, like there's so much lore with you, and it is like very entertaining because you are so, like unorthodox, non-conventional. It's like when you talk about lifting, like I've seen the videos on Instagram of you like lifting these crazy weights, and we're just like, what the fuck? Like, how can this guy do this stuff? And then we hear, like, we often hear about some of the workouts that you guys do in particular, like this more like speed side of stuff. You guys do some crazy shit, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I never really realized how intense it was until like other pro athletes like, yeah, you guys work out harder than we do. And I was like, really? Like, I always like like, in going way back, I thought, like, pro runners would just run 520s for their recovery runs. They would just lift insane amount of weight. Like, I just, you know, I just thought that was the norm. And now I'm, like, learning, talking to, you know, you guys. I'm like, wait a second. These guys aren't doing necessarily that, you know? So, you know, for me, it's just like, all right, calm down. Just relax. Trust your talent. You know, you don't need to, you know, go all out every single day, and but like keep that for the races, you know. And so, you know, it's, I feel kind of weird because, like, you know, I'm older than like a lot of runners, but I still feel more green and a little newer to the sport. And so I feel like I definitely have like ability to continue to grow. And, you know, I hope to break, you know, 350 this indoors. You know, that's the one thing I've been writing on like my journals and everything. It's, you know, I just feel like that's like the coolest thing to do.
That is very cool.
It is very cool. I mean, it's interesting that you say that, because like for me, looking at the sport as it is now, there's so many young athletes that have this, all this training and all this consistency, and they get to this level so much earlier than a lot of us have ever seen, but then they kind of fizzle out later on. And it made me realize that like professional runners in particular, being a weight bearing sport, and it's the same with NFL, it's the same with a lot of sports that have a lot of high intensity, is that you probably have in your lifetime a period of time, maybe 8, 10, 12 years. Sorry, Morgan, talking way too loud. 8, 10, I'm getting excited about this. 8, 10, 12 years of like professional running, intensity running. And you have this point in your career where you're still green, you still have all this time, and the age isn't really an issue. It's more just the intensity of years that you put in. Because, yeah. I mean, you can have athletes that start this intensity training at 16, they get to 24, 25, 26, and they're like, I'm like done. I'm like, my body is not.
Yeah.
It can't do it anymore. But if you start at 26 or 27, you go to 35, 36, and all of a sudden you're running just as fast as everybody else. It's just, that's what I believe, is that you have a period in your life where you have these years of just intensity, and you work hard for it, and it doesn't matter how old you are.
Yeah.
You just get it in. So it's interesting to hear your story, because it's so different to what we're seeing a lot now with a lot of the younger guys coming through. And it's cool to see that people can see that you can do it. You just got to put in those years, put in those times. That's what you're doing. So
yeah, I've always kind of felt like in regards to that, there's like, it's both like the mind and the body, you know. And I imagine for a lot of runners, like we see it, like it's really taxing on your body, but it's also really taxing mentally, because you put your heart and soul into it every year. And yeah, that's draining. And there's a lot of people who, you know, they end up, maybe their bodies aren't in a great place, but often I feel like it's the minds. Like, people get to a point where they're like, all right, I've grinded this out for long enough, and now it's time to move on. So I think just having the enthusiasm and the excitement and the feeling that you're still like early in your journey, you still have so much that you want to go out and achieve, I think that gives you so much power, kind of.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. I think that's exactly right. I think what makes me a little different is, like, I feel like I'm always still like the most enthusiastic person. I'm like, wow, I get to run, you know, for a living. I get to, you know, finally achieve my lifetime goal, being a professional athlete. Like, when I was a kid, all I wanted to do was be a professional athlete. Didn't know what sport. And so I'm like, I feel like I just got there, you know. And you know, a lot of people will say, you know, well, you're not going to get any better, you know, you're too old and whatnot. And, you know, I'm like, you know what? Challenge accepted. I mean, people, naysayers and people who doubt me, it's like, I've been doubted since high school. I've been doubted definitely in college, you know. I got told like every day, like, by people, because I would tell them my goals, and like, yeah, you're not like genetically gifted. You know, you don't have the body type, you don't have the genetics, you don't have the talent. And I got that told over and over and over again. And you know what? Like, let me just work hard and prove these guys wrong. And, you know, like, I feel like I can get to this elite level. It's just tough, because I feel like every year everyone just gets better.
No.
So I'm like trying to catch up. I'm like, come on, guys, can we just like chill?
Give me a little bit of time. Not... Everyone take pause. I'm gonna do my thing for a little bit. Everyone else, hold on.
Yeah, just take this year off.
I'm like, come on, man. Like, it's getting to a point where, like, I remember, like, I was running the 5th Ave mile, and there was some guy from France, and I looked him up, and he ran 3:30. And I'm like, who's this guy? Like, I've never heard of this guy.
Wait, who was that?
I think Habs.
No.
Was it not Habs? Oh, no, it might have been the other guy. There's like two French guys.
France had like all these runners pop off this year, yeah. And most of them were young people.
This is this year.
Yeah, he didn't run any fast events, fast times, except a 3:30. And I just never seen this guy before. And
I'm like, he might have been like one of those guys that ran like 3:30 in the other races, like in Houston or something. Or
I think maybe
I can't remember his name.
Yeah,
but,
no, it's Paris. Oh, it might have been Paris Diamond race. League. Like all these French guys just absolutely.
Well, that's because Habs ran 3:27, and then the rest
was a good race to do it.
That was really the race to run fast. I mean.
But it is crazy. Like it is a wild world that we live in. But I always think that you're going to have on that end of the spectrum, it's just going to continue to, I mean, I guess it'll eventually have to level off. But for now, we're in a period where it's going to get crazy and crazier. And you're going to have these guys. Like
it did kind of level off near the end of the year, though.
Yeah. I guess if you look at who performed at the World Champs, it was like a lot of experienced guys.
The people that were top three. Except for the third guy was Chariot, right? Ronald?
Yeah, I think he's
he ran really well through the year. But like, I think, because Whiteman and Natives, they both didn't break 3:30 this year, I don't think. They broke 3:50 because Natives won Oslo in 3:48 and then Whiteman ran 3:47. So they've run really good miles. But, you know, it definitely like, I think I'm not saying it will pamper out this year, but it will be like consistency.
Yeah, but in general. It's just, you know, everyone is going down these more conventional paths, but I think you see it year after year, like you can never predict, like you would especially like, yeah, looking at this past year is a perfect example. It's like no one would have ever predicted if everyone was like, we were putting money on the sport, like across the board, it's like everyone would have lost so much money this year because everything
was great
was,
for gambling because yeah, I just don't know where it is.
It's well, crazy.
So many, like the guy you mentioned, the 3:27 French guy, didn't even get out. Was he eliminated in the first round?
Yeah.
Round?
He got eliminated in the heats.
In the heats.
Yeah. And I was like, it was weird because he ran 3:27. I'm like, is this guy like the new GOAT? Like, he looks so good. And then all of a sudden, maybe he peaked too early in the season, but.
Yeah. You know. I mean, it's just, it's a crazy sport we live in.
Yeah,
well, I mean, like the Olympic, like Yara, I thought at the time this year was the best athlete around, and he had a bad, he just didn't run the best race. And you look back at it, and he's like, I had a good year, but obviously you want to be at Worlds, but I had a good year. And then you look at like he not being there, it's like, well, that's another.
There's a lot of cases like that.
Yeah.
Look at Jakob. He like obviously got hurt, but this indoors, I was like, when he ran 3:45 after Jared broke the record, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah,
like,
how's this guy crazy?
Holy shit. Like, crap, he's going to break the mile outdoor world record, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. Jesus.
That was a crazy race.
And then, like, of course, like, you know, he gets hurt, and it's just like, this sport, like, that's what gives me a little bit of hope. I'm like, well, maybe, you know, I can get a little bit better. You know, I part of my dream is a break 3:30. You know, I just feel like that's such an epic barrier. One day, maybe. And, you know, maybe if I, you know, make USAs or make Worlds, maybe, who knows? Who knows what happens?
Who knows? Totally.
A lot of those races, though, now, like, it could be the race to do it. I feel like with that, when you get to that kind of that, how fast that is, you have to be in that race. And sometimes you're like, shit, I wish I was in that race.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, now it's like, a lot of those races are starting to exist more. There's going to be more of them. And that's the nice thing is like you could be in that race, and it doesn't have to be a Diamond League, it could be a USA final, it could be a New York Grand Prix. You just don't know now because there's so many people that can make that race what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I also
think it's so weird. You guys probably know this very well. Sometimes you run a fast time and it doesn't like feel that hard.
Yeah,
that's how I think a lot of the time when you run your best, it doesn't feel as hard. When you don't run well, that's when it feels really hard.
Yeah, like I remember Penn Relays back in 2024, I was like doing really bad workouts. My teammate Ben Allen, who by the way had a PR 408-151 out of college and joins our team and now runs like 333-352 unsponsored, hope he gets sponsored soon.
The second Eric Holt.
Yeah, but he was like crushing me in workouts. I was having terrible workouts. And I remember I was with you and Yair Nagus, and I was like, all right, I'll just stick with them and see what happens. And I remember I finished, and I was like coming on your shoulders a little bit. And I remember I was like, that was probably 357, 356. and it was 351.4. And I remember being so mad. I was like, oh man, I feel like I didn't push myself as hard as I could have. And I was like, dang, dude, that's so weird. Like, some of my best races felt so like,
yeah,
feel that hard.
That race was weird too, because I felt the same, because I remember Jared going like, oh, I'll push it through so we can go 350. And I was coming off my pelvis injury. So yeah, I was like a little bit like, okay, maybe this will be hard, you know? And then we get to, I think Jared takes the lead. And then with a lap to go, he just started to die. And I'm like, oh, I got to go. And then I went, and then I hit the rail. I'm like, oh crap, kind of freaking out. And then Jared took the lead again. And then there was the three of us coming through, and it was 351. I'm like, damn, like it was a little windy. Like it was a bit of a disgruntled race, but it was a really good run, particularly at Penn, because I feel like Penn isn't all it's has
hard
its
to run
moments
faster.
It has its moments for sure, definitely has its moments, Penn, but it's not necessarily always a quick track. So that was a cool race. I remember that. But 351 now, like, is that's still really good.
That's it's never still, not gonna be really
yeah
good.
Like I think I that's the same thing with, like, obviously now everyone's trying to run sub 330, but 332, 333 is good, because like,
yeah,
you run that well and comfortable these days, even in a tactical race, you're going to
be
up there.
You already said it before. Like, yeah, let's say Whiteman, who by the time you get to World Champs final, he's leading and he ends up of such a close second.
Yeah.
Throughout the year, if you look at all his times,
what was the winning time for Worlds?
I think 334.
I can't remember.
It was a tactical race.
It was more tactical, but I just mean, like, for him, it's like he hadn't, it's not like he had broken 330 year, you know, he had been doing these, he'd had a few like low 330 performances, and everyone knows how good he is. But
well, I'll give it to Josh too, because Josh did get injured in that race, but you just don't know how those things go, you know, it's so up in the air. And also, like, Cole got DQ'd, like, there's just so many random shit happen, like it's the way the sport works. But
so you just gotta keep trying,
just keep at it, if you keep consistent and you keep the attitude, and the probabilities will land in your court. I am a believer of that, because unfortunately, the sport is tough with the injuries and the setbacks and stuff. But if you just keep at it, probability wise, you'll get that opportunity. So,
100%.
Yeah.
So you're out here now in Colorado doing a bit of training. I mean, you're here obviously to visit your friend, I think, primarily.
Yeah,
not like some super serious altitude camp. I don't know. But looking ahead to next year, you already mentioned that you have goals for indoors. But being an off year, do you have any different plans or goals for it, or you're just going back in and saying, like, let's try win everything, let's get a USA's and see what we can do?
Yeah, I definitely think altitude has been a key. Like, it's made training so much easier, because I think for me too is, like, one good thing about altitude is I feel like I don't have to be as strict on my diet, just because I'm a type of runner, like, I have to pay attention to my food, because I just feel like I gain weight a little quicker than maybe some other runners. But, like, when I go to Flag, also, I just feel like I don't really have to try that hard. Like, it's weird. It's like the altitude's like a kind of a cheat code, because you just live there. You do mediocre workouts or hardest workouts or workouts that I could easily do at sea level. I'm like, oh, really? That's our hard workout? Like, that sounds so easy. And I'm like, am I in good shape? And then immediately always want to come out at altitude, I have like either the greatest workout or the best race. So I think I'm going to time it where, like, I'm not going to get an invite to Milrose, but if I win Sanders, you qualify for the Wanamaker. So my goal is to go to Flagstaff for 5 weeks and then come back the week of Sanders and, you know, just do everything right, get to race weight, you know, do everything perfect. I feel like I don't have to kill myself, and, you know, hopefully, you know, I win the race, qualify for Wanamaker, and, you know, just run in the race and, you know, break 350 and get like an IAF ranking that makes me a 327.15 or 100 runner.
Yeah, the ranking's crazy.
Yeah. That is the point. So
also have fun, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. No,
racing in those races, like particularly like Dr. Sanders and Milrose is one of the funnest races you can do.
Do you
so
like,
cool.
Is the Armory your favorite track? Do you have a favorite?
I mean,
we love the Armory.
I think the Armory has gotten a lot better since it's been resurfaced. I think especially now, I believe they have pacing lights. So I think the Armory might be faster than BU. So.
I think obviously people look at BU and they say, oh,
cheat code.
But I think the Armory feels a lot nicer to run on. Because BU's got this weird type of thing, which I've only raced it.
You bounce a lot when you get to the straight.
Yeah, and it's like the way that the turns are. I've only raced it at one time, so I don't have the same experience, whereas I've gone to the Armory quite a few times. The Armory just feels smooth, and you get the crowd going, and they're above you. It gets so loud in there. I think it's just as good, especially if you had a race like Dr. Sanders or especially Milrose. Yeah, that's if you're going to run fast anywhere, that's a place to do it. And especially now, the thing is, it wasn't always like this. Like, even when we first started going to Milrose, it wasn't like this. But now that you got the Yarra Nagus and stuff, it's like they're trying to run faster every time. Mm-hmm. Because I remember before, it used to be much more of a like, this could be a tactical race.
Yeah.
It's about winning. But now every year, it's let's see how many guys can run 350. I mean,
the past two times I've raced it, I've never broken 350 indoors. But the past times I've run 350.
Yeah.
And it's been like a tactical 350 race. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, and then obviously now you got guys just running 346. But
yeah.
So,
let's do it.
It's crazy. I remember watching you win, and I think you won it in 350, right?
350. Yeah. Because Josh and I think Josh was a little under the weather. Mm-hmm. He always is when he's in New York. But yeah, that was the 350 race. And then they said that I think Legat ran 349 there once. And then they had Yomif ran 348. So then when Yared came, he broke the record there. When I got third, Gully was second. He ran 347 there. And then the year after that was, I think you were in that. Were you in that race?
Were you in the race before? Yeah.
You were at Milrose.
I made it one time. I unfortunately did pretty bad. I think also it was like, this is like the, I feel like now, like I was always like never in the best shape indoors.
Mm.
Like I
well,
never,
it's the time of year, it's very hard to like maintain it as well for the, because outdoors is where we want to shine. It's very hard to maintain it through the whole way.
Yeah, I got absolutely destroyed. But I feel like if I do altitude beforehand, then
it'll help with the buff of the fitness for sure. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it'll get quick every year. I mean, I'm hoping to run Milrose as well. But it just depends on all the factors.
Yeah.
But it's a great meet. It's a fantastic meet. The one thing about it is
in America, it's like the best meet.
It's probably the best meet. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, BU is great too if you want to run fast or if you want to see where you are. But but if you want to race, Milrose Games, unreal.
That's where it's at. So, Big goals for indoors. Do you know where you'll be targeting for outdoors, or we'll see when we get there?
So I've never raced in Europe. So
you've never raced in Europe?
No. So I'm trying to set up I'm still like going through the logistics, but I think we were planning on maybe like an altitude camp in maybe Switzerland, and then racing in Europe for like 3 or 4 weeks or whatever.
That's the way to do it.
You'll love it. It's the funnest thing. If you love the lifestyle of professional athletes, St. Moritz is like literally the Buddhist temple of that, because literally all you do is you train in a beautiful place, you eat and you sleep. But I would save my pennies because it is a little expensive.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm going to save.
If you go with people and you split everything, it's great.
It's amazing. Really, and then
you can go with a few boys or few of your teammates. It's really good because you can save good money when you travel with people. It is beautiful there. I think the training is great. Key event is amazing. Go down there.
Yeah.
Rip some fast reps. It'll be
And then like traveling and racing through Europe is like the funnest thing you can do in this sport.
Yeah.
So I think you would actually absolutely thrive off doing that. So that'll be exciting to see.
I think that's the pinnacle of like, you know, when you talk about being a professional runner,
yeah,
like that's the pinnacle, racing and traveling in Europe, because like I think with the European circuit, like the history there, it's really good. In the US, it's great, but I feel like that you can just go to different countries, see different stadiums, and it's a lot easier to jump around. So that'll be really fun.
Yeah. No, yeah, and I feel like it's just like a good learning experience, because like I feel like, you know, I was like maybe a little bit sheltered. I didn't know that much outside of America in terms of like culture and like how people act. You know, I just look at like the American way as like, you know, like the only way of life almost. So I did go to Europe last year, and I was just like, wow, you know, it's so different, you know, like
it's very different,
you know, just for a vacation. And, you know, also just talking to so many people in the sport, learning about, you know, like what Australia is like or New Zealand. And I don't know. It's just, I find it so interesting because like the first time I ever left the country was for a track meet. So I've actually, So I think it was for like NICAC when I went to, you know, the Bahamas. And then, so it's just like, you know, track is my outlet to like, you know, see like the like America, the rest of the world, and so
exact
I'm
same
very
for
grateful.
Yeah,
it's
amazing.
That's what we use it for.
It's so amazing, and it's like one of the parts that we're the most grateful for. So definitely getting to take advantage of it is always really special.
Mm-hmm.
So that's gonna be very cool to see, especially next year, where it's a different year. It's crazy to me that you haven't. Like, you know, all these years that you haven't been able to go over yet. But I guess there's been a lot of good races in the U.S. that you've...
Yeah.
You're very consistently, like, if there's a good race in the U.S., it's like Eric Holt will probably... he'll be turning up there and doing his thing. Changing gears just a little bit. We have some fun special celebrity guest questions that we'll get to in a second. But before that, we don't know if this is in the realm of the stuff that your friend told you not to talk about. But so you have this... genius rich girlfriend that's come up in some interviews and stuff.
She's genius as well.
Yeah, I mean, she was from a culture where she wasn't allowed to ever, you know, get worse than an A, you know, so she never had like a B.
Oh, I wouldn't survive in that culture.
that's a tough culture.
I would not survive.
So yeah, I mean, I think watching a post-race I think I was watching one before from the BU where you and Craig Ingalls were chatting it up and you guys were just going off on these tangents and I don't know who it was behind the camera, maybe Melly, who's like, you guys know like I'm interviewing you right now. You guys are just having this amazing chat. Yeah. But yeah, there's no filter when you get in the post-race interview, huh?
Yeah, I guess, you know, I've never necessarily been, media trained.
No.
Never did many interviews in my life. And, you know, I was from, like, a family, to be honest, like, no one in my family, my sisters, my parents, especially my dad, has literally no filter whatsoever. Like, my dad would tell you his political views.
Mm-hmm.
He'd like semi insult you without trying to insult you. Like, he can be like,
mm-hmm.
anyone who meets him, like, you're like, oh my god, like,
yeah,
you know. So
I know the type, they're out there.
So yeah, I mean, I'm trying now
you'd
like,
be very professional today, I would say.
Oh, 100%.
But I mean, we're definitely not the first interview you've done, so you've progressed like as naturally, like, I mean, episode zero, Morgan.
Yeah, yeah.
You can talk about episode zero.
We've also progressed.
We've also progressed. This is 203, so it's taken us a little time as well. And we're still having, well, I'm still having hiccups, but...
We do. But that, I mean, it's one of the things that makes you so endearing as well, because
most
post-race interviews are pretty boring.
Yeah, and you're very real and very expressive. And I think people like to see that, because a lot of interviews, if they go the same way, they all blend together. So.
Yeah, not yours.
No.
I appreciate it. Yeah, no, it's... Yeah, I don't know. I guess this is just the way I've always been, you know. I don't know. Maybe I was brought up, but yeah, I don't know.
But we love it. So never change, please. I guess the media, as you do the more, like, you get better and better, you find your kind of niche, your vibe. But you've got a great vibe right now, so just keep it going. But onto our celebrity guest questions. I'll fire the first one up.
What's up, Coffee Club boys? Just chiming in here after my workout with a question for Eric Holt. I saw recently you posted a video or a story on Instagram alluding to maybe doing Hyrox. And I'm curious, I know nothing about Hyrox, but it seems like you've got the endurance, the speed, the strength. Would you ever give Hyrox a try? And who could beat you at Hyrox? It seems like you would kind of be a juggernaut. So. Curious for your thoughts.
Yeah, so
thank you, Joe.
So my agent came up the idea for Hyrox. It stands for a hybrid rock star, and you
Eric
know,
Holt.
Yeah. So I didn't know anything about it, and you know, there was one in Boston, and I was going to see the Puma facilities for the first time in America, which was, by the way, really cool. I got to see shoes prototypes from many years from now, and they're like, "Hey, you should do this Hyrox." And so what it is you run a 1K and then you do a lift. So the lifts are like you have to push a 440-pound sled, which, by the way, was on like terrible surface when I competed. And then you have to pull a sled that's like, I don't know, like 400 pounds. And then it's like, I mean, in between each one, you run a 1K. And then I'm trying to remember all the events. But they're like...
So there's a bunch of just different strength events with 1K runs in between them.
Yeah, correct. There's 8 of them. And so I didn't really train for it. And I was like not really running. I was taking some time off. And I remember when I showed up, I did the pro division, which, by the way, the weights are like 40% heavier than the open division.
Oh, boy.
And I did like a sled push and pull at my own gym, but the surface was like kind of like slippery. And so when I got to the competition, I like was trying out some events for the first time. And I was like, oh, crap. Like, I barely could push the sled. And so I got out, I think, in like 240 for the first K. And I was like,
it's very fast,
beyond world record pace. And the first event actually was a ski urge, which is like simulates cross country skiing. I did that easily, still on world record pace. And then I go to like the sled push, and I actually, with adrenaline, was able to do it. But oh boy, it like crushed my body. It was so much heavier than I could ever imagine. I had my friend there, and you couldn't even push it like 3 feet, and you have to push it 50 meters. And I mean, it was, I want to throw up afterwards. It was completely anaerobic. And then I ran a 1K, and then I got to the sled pull. And basically, I never did it before, and I didn't know how to do it. And I guess there's like a lot of technique.
Yeah, that
you think
sense.
pulling a sled would be easy, but I was like, ah, I don't know how to do this. And like, I was like, I was there for like 2 minutes and barely like pulled it. And then my other competitors caught up, and then I was like, ah, I don't want to really hurt myself. And plus, I got like six more events, and I haven't been running or training that much. So I ended up just like dropping out. But I was like, you know what? Like, I feel like if I really trained for this, I tried all the events on the right surface, I feel like I could, you know, potentially win the world championship and break a record for it.
Well, but it seems like a very popular thing, but it does seem like, yeah, if you actually just did a little bit of training for the specific events, you would be very hard to, I mean, those guys must be so strong, I guess.
Yeah,
that's the big difference, is they're working on that side of it.
Yeah, I think that would be like very much the hard part of it.
Well, it was funny, like when I showed up, it was like the opposite of like usually I show up to a track race, I'm usually the biggest guy, and then when I went to High Rocks, I was the smallest guy.
Yeah.
It was like a weird dynamic. And, you know, I learned, I was like, oh, crap. Like, I probably should have trained for this. But it was also like at a time where it was like right after Fifth Ave. I wanted to take like 1 to 2 weeks off.
Totally.
Not be an athlete for at least a little part of the year, you know? So I obviously didn't take, you know, I didn't really train at all for it. But I felt like, you know, if I really like took it seriously, trained for it for like 3 to 4 months and just did High Rocks, I could do well. But honestly, I wouldn't really take it that seriously until like after like I retire from this sport. I feel like it's a Makes thing sense. You could do a lot later in life, because honestly, you only have to run like probably like 3:20 for the Ks to be on like world record pace. You know?
Well, I think you would, if there was a pro running specific High Rocks, I think you would. You would definitely take that.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
I can't see us getting that sled very far.
It was so much harder than I realized. I was like, for some reason, like, I don't know, like when I trained for it, I moved it like butter. And this one, it was like unbelievable. It took every bit of my strength to push it.
Crazy. I can't imagine that. Well, we have our second and final celebrity guest question coming in.
Hey, Eric, Sam Harris here. You are one who steps on the basketball court from time to time. My question to you, I've seen the video of you dunking. My question to you is, if you had to put together a starting five for your track and field group, so if you want to say 8 and 1500 meters, that's great, or just 15, that's fine, to compete against other track and field groups, who would you choose and why? And in a round robin tournament, who do you think would win?
Oh, so you're saying like what track clubs would be the best in a...
Well, I think you get to put together... If you just had a starting five out of all the 800, 1500 meter guys in the world, who would be on your lineup?
Oh, man.
I think we'll start there.
Dang, that's a tough one. I feel like...
It's a tough one because our sport is not coordination.
Yeah. I think you got to go all in on who's like the athlete, like the athletic beast that would be able to translate across to basketball. Taking skill into account. I mean, you could if you know anyone that's particularly good, but like my head goes straight to just like someone like Donovan Brazier.
Yeah, that's who's the first
like,
guy I was going to say.
Like
Donovan
that guy
Brazier.
Can
play
dunk. Yeah, yeah, I'd say he's super athletic.
There's some really tall 800 guys.
Yeah, I'm trying to
pick
from.
Like I would want an A-Rup on my team.
Oh yeah, Marco Arop, isn't he like 6'5"? Like
he's a big man.
He was like the first guy I ever seen that was like bigger than me. And I remember it was like one of my first races for Empire. He ran like 3:55.
Yeah.
And he's now running what, like 3:35 in
Grand Slam.
You know, the track, what
Grand Slam.
Grand
track.
Slam, yeah. But definitely A-Rob, probably Donovan Brazier.
We're gonna get some 1500 meter guys on.
Pretty good. You're tall. What, you're 6'3"?
I'm not good at basketball, but I mean, actually, I was
run
okay.
The clips.
I was okay. Run the clips, but
you're putting yourself on the team,
yeah,
surely.
So that's, okay, that's you. And then you are you sure you're picking me?
I mean, don't you Australians play that game? It's like basketball.
I mean, you're not 15800.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what game we play that's like basketball. Are you talking about AFL?
It's like a net, but there's no backboard.
Oh, netball.
Netball. That's a women's sport, but they're very good. All right, so we got A-Rop, Brazier, Holt. We got two more spots.
Who's the tallest American 15? I guess it's Yared.
He's not good at basketball.
Is he good?
He's athletic, but we've played volleyball with him.
He's really good at like video games. I heard he was like amazing at Splatoon.
That's correct. He's insane at Splatoon. I watched him play Splatoon on our Europe trips with the Diamond League circuit, and I almost had a seizure. It was crazy.
Very good at Mario Kart.
So good.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But you can put him if you want.
I'm trying to think. Is there any like runner who's like a distance runner who's like 6'6 or 6'7, like Andrew Whedon?
You could put Andrew. Why not put Andrew Whedon?
I mean, Andrew
Whedon.
Yeah. I feel like he could.
All right, Whedon.
That's a baller right there.
He's a baller, probably. You got one more.
Trying to think of anyone. I mean, honestly,
who's like your point guard? Maybe you get like a point guard or a shooting.
Yeah,
guard
you can think of anybody
shorter
that you know. I mean, they can be anyone.
Ooh.
They might have to run. They have to at least run a 1500 or
like 800. You could pick like a Cole Hawker or someone if you think they're a baller.
I mean, yeah, I feel like
Cole probably is a baller, to be honest.
He looks like it.
Yeah, I've seen him do like some other sports. Like, isn't it true that I've heard this that Cole Hawker is like almost as good at in cycling? Like, he's like an elite.
He's very good at cycling.
Is he? I wouldn't know.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if he's at that like.
I mean, when you
level
say almost as good, the bar is pretty high.
No, well, maybe not as good.
He is.
Yeah, he's the best at our sport. And
yeah,
then you've got people like, we know a guy called Seth Hirsch, who's an insane cyclist, but I don't know if Seth and Cole would align. You got one more.
All right, let me think. This is a tough one. Honestly, one of my ex-teammates who made Tokyo in the steeplechase, Isaac Updike.
Isaac Updike.
I can see him being a baller.
Wow, I didn't expect that.
No,
you went to steeplechase, though. That's smart.
He's very skillful. I remember, like, I'm really good at throwing a football, and he was, like, the one runner that could actually, like, out-throw a football.
He could out-throw you.
Yeah, like, I throw, like, pretty far, you know? And he was like, really good at, like, every sport, just very...
That's a pretty good team.
Put him on the team, on the squad.
That's a
there
pretty
go
good team.
And he's like, 6'4"-ish, so.
I don't,
is he,
I
6'4"?
6'3", I think.
Yeah, dang, he's tall.
Yeah.
Jeez.
I can't think of any other squad that could beat that team.
That's the elite. That's the all-star
team
right
when you've
there
got A-Rop and Brazier, and you got Holt.
I mean, obviously, I think the American team /Canadian is taking down the rest of the world, I think.
Yeah, I agree with
goes
that.
Goes without saying.
I know, it's just tough because sometimes like you see certain runners and like I forgot like Yair Nuguse, he's like 6'2".
He's tall.
I thought he was like 5'8" for some reason until like I met him and I was like, wait,
our team is quite tall. We have, I think our shortest person on our team is Dathan. Dathan's pretty short.
Yeah.
The rest of us are all around 6 foot or 6'2". So
make a good basketball squad, I guess.
Except
compared to other
nation.
But I think that's a good answer.
I like that answer. I like that answer.
He's your biggest fan. Do you know? Sam?
Yeah, I did. He always posts on my
does he slide in your
Strava
DMs?
And he always has like an I forget. I think he has like a funny profile pic or something. I think
sounds like him. Funny guy. Funny guy indeed. But is there any other things that you would like to talk about today before we kind of sign off? Any messages you would like to leave to the fans out there?
Yeah, absolutely. One thing I always talk about is, especially with Empire Elite, one thing I want is hopefully one day my coach, John Trotman, in Empire Elite to get sponsored. So, my team and my coach doesn't lose money. He actually, you know, if not, makes a little bit of money. And, you know, that's like a dream we're chasing. So, you know, shout out to Empire Elite. I also want to shout out some of my teammates. You know, guys like Ben Allen, who, you know, only ran 408 in college, 151, turned out to be, you know, now runs 333, 146. And, you know, everyone else on my team that has been grinding, and they all have the same, you know, goal as me, is to be sponsored. They're doing everything they can to get there. So shout out to everyone on Empire, you know, Will Cumberson, and, you know, just everyone else on that team. So I don't want to like label, but they know who they are. So I hope, you know, and anyone else who's listening, just like, if you love this, if you have the passion for this, and, you know, you don't have to necessarily be like these guys, be an NCAA champion. You know, you can, if you love it and you think you have what it takes, go for it. And you only have one life, and, you know, and I think, you know, life's short and you should chase your passions in life. A lot of people don't. And I think it's special to do it. And, you know, maybe one day you can, you know, make your dreams happen and do something you really love to do for a living. And yeah, no, like that's what I want to say. And again, that, like, I loved watching you guys in Wisconsin, but yeah, dude, it's been special to have me here. It's been awesome. And, you know, I'm so privileged to be in this. Like, I honestly think I'm privileged and so happy and lucky to be in this situation. And, you know, it's been great.
Well, thank you so much.
Well, we are all privileged, and that's probably the best sign off we've had in a very long time.
Not getting any better than that.
I don't want to be this guy that puts things together, but like Tracksmith and Empire Elite seem like a fit. Isn't Tracksmith from East
Boston,
Coast?
Yeah.
I mean, actually, funny enough, Trotman reached out. So hopefully Tracksmith sponsors Empire. And
even just like giving, like if they're doing flights or if they're doing like this gear, it just seems like fit. Like Empire seems like what Tracksmith promotes in advertising, it seems like it'd be a fit. Like the way that people just push themselves, pursue, you know, their own individual greatness. It's, I don't know. That makes sense to me.
Yeah,
but
we're cheering for you guys. And, I mean, we've always been cheering for you guys, but there's so many pro runners and pro teams out there. But to, you know, have guys like you doing it and going for it is something that's so admirable, and it's really easy to get behind. So we'll always be cheering for you and the rest of the team. And thank you so much for coming on today. We've really enjoyed having you here.
Good for the sport, baby.
I appreciate it. And thank you for Andrew Sweeney for taking me and hosting me.
Shout out.
No, great friend. Also another supporter.
Well, on that note, I think we'll say thank you guys so much for listening. This has been episode 203 of the Coffee Club podcast, and we look forward to seeing you guys all again next week. See ya.
This is like an Australian cookie?
It's an Australian cookie. That's exactly what it is.
Oh, wow. Don't you guys like eat like...
Wait, do we... I don't know if there's any left in
there. That's a good question, but they could be off as well.
Eric, I don't know.
Oh, my God. I think there's like one left.
I don't know if you can say you guys.
Oh.
I'm kidding.
Great.
Oh, wow. This is
taste
cool.
Test. You gotta rate it out of 10. It's been sitting there for a while, so.
I like it. Yeah,
it's
Tim Tam.
Tim Tam.
Don't you guys like eat something in, like in a jar that everyone finds gross?
Vegemite.
Vegemite.
That's.
Do you guys have Vegemite?
Vegemite.